Nick Huber joins us today on the show. This is the second time that Nick has been on, and I had a lot of fun with this episode. It's very different from our typical episodes. Nick is a real estate entrepreneur, investor, etc. He runs three main businesses that are all multi-million dollar businesses. He started his first business called Storage Squad in 2011. And now he runs three different businesses, like I said, Bolt Storage, Somewhere.com, and RE Cost Seg. We don't get into the weeds a ton on those three businesses, but he's absolutely qualified to talk about real estate and business. Nick has a large following on Twitter or X, and that's relevant because we spend most of the episode actually talking about some of the controversial opinions that Nick has. He put out a tweet recently or a post on X listing, I think it was 25 controversial opinions that he thinks will become universally accepted in the next 25 years, something like that. So we go through a lot of these controversial topics, which is really, and I tried to challenge him on some of them for sure. Really interesting stuff. We do talk about some of the adversity that Nick has faced. We talk about a couple of the stories that you'll find in his upcoming book, and what the takeaway is for the real estate entrepreneur, the real estate investor. But just to give you a quick snapshot, a couple of the controversial things we talk about, that the opinions that Nick holds. One is that video games are terribly addictive and are ruining kids' lives. Another is we talk a lot about routine blood work and hormone optimization and how that would keep 40-year-old men from looking like blobs and 40-year-old women keep them sexually active with their husbands. Several other very controversial topics we dive into. We talk about powerlifting and long distance running and a lot about heart disease and also AI and crypto and Nick's take on those two topics. There's so much packed into this one. It's not your typical episode of focusing on one particular moment of adversity or Nick's story. We talk in the first episode a couple years ago about Nick's story. This one is really fun, very controversial, and I think you're going to love it.
From Adversity to Abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and I'm pumped today to have with us Nick Huber. Nick is a second-time guest on the show. Nick, how are you doing today?
Jamie, thanks for having me. Love the show.
Yeah, thank you. This is going to be fun. I know you got a lot going on. We've got there's so many. I could have you on 10 more times, and we would barely scratch the surface. So for the listener who may be unfamiliar with you, Nick, who are you and what are you up to today?
Yeah, I live in Athens, Georgia. I own three main businesses. I came up, 2011, started a moving and storage company for students. Sold that in 2020. And Bolt Storage is kind of my main business. We own and operate self-storage facilities. I acquired majority interest of Somewhere.com about a year ago. And I own a real estate tax service business called RE Cost Seg that's growing really fast. So yeah, I'm an entrepreneur. Have a couple kids and just trying to live a good life, man. It's not always easy. This world throws some stuff at you.
For sure. I've been following you on Twitter or X now for quite some time, as a lot of people do. I think almost 400,000 people do. it's just been an impressive journey to follow for sure. I know there's a lot of ups and downs. It's not all, straight line to success for sure. But I guess recently somewhere.com last year, right, was your big purchase. Is that right?
Yep. Look, I'm just really passionate about business models that work. And I think almost everybody should look the other way from venture capital, new idea, innovation, and do things that work, man. Like my storage company is just a good business. Somewhere.com is a good business, and RE Constellate are good businesses. But yeah, the biggest deal I've done recently is I raised $20 million from outside investors, borrowed $9.3 million from the seller to buy majority interest in Somewhere.com, which is a international recruiting company that finds South African, Egyptian, Latin American, Filipino employees for US-based businesses.
Nice. And I know some of the you take a lot of heat for different things, especially on Twitter, like I said. But speaking of Twitter, you put out a tweet the other day that I noticed, and it's all about your personal opinions that may be controversial, and that you think will be universally accepted in 20 years from now. And we're recording this in 2025, so we'll have to have you back on in 20 years.
Let's do it. Hopefully, some of these things are accepted a little earlier than that.
Yeah, let's hope, right? Let's run through a couple of these and talk about them. We're
Yeah.
going to make this show a little different than my typical episode for the
And in the
show.
show notes, we'll put in the show notes this exact tweet so people can kind of pull it
Sounds
up
great.
and look at
Yeah.
the discussions because my opinion is one thing, but I also change my mind pretty often, and a lot of people commented some very interesting things on here, and it's a
Yeah.
great discussion. So,
Yeah.
let's do it, man.
I remember last on the first episode, which we'll link to in the show notes, you did mention that you like to change your mind often. And
We
I think,
last spoke and it was 2022. We did the last one, right? 2023. I think I've changed my mind on a ton since then, and a lot of it's on this list.
right. That's hilarious. That's an important skill for sure. I know I've gotten better at that. I'm not always great at that myself. But all right, number one, you think video games are horrifically addictive and ruining kids' lives. Why do you say that?
I see it in real time in my friends who have kids, whether they're, 8-year-olds or 16-year-olds. They're showing every sign of like severe addiction, and the parents are in denial. They are constantly asking their friends for more screen time or their parents for more screen time. They are spending entirely too much time on video games, and that leads to them then being more likely to go to college and play video games the whole time they're there instead of studying, playing sports, meeting women, doing whatever it is. But like it's highly correlated to living in your parents' basement at 30 years old. Like I'm sorry, it's super addictive. It's very bad for kids. It's terrible. So yeah, if you want to end up, 35 overweight and casting spells in your bedroom at 3 a.m., then let your kids play. So yeah, I'm taking the opposite approach of this, and I'm not allowing video games in my house. So if my kid comes to me wanting to play Minecraft or Fortnite or any of this stuff, the answer is no, because it is way too addictive. And look, like the argument against this is that it builds community and parents even play with kids.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to challenge you just in that
Yeah.
on that point. It's like that's how I know my son likes Minecraft. He connects with other people that way. And I'm intentionally trying to go against you here. But so I do agree it is addictive for sure. But what about the argument that it is a social, network in and of itself where people can connect? What about during COVID when you couldn't go outside? We got my daughter a phone during COVID because she wouldn't have any friends to communicate with otherwise. So, whether or not that was a good move, I don't know.
Yeah.
But what do you say about that? I mean,
There are a lot of
Minecraft.
people who play video games that end up being high performing people. Like this is not a blanket deal. A lot of the tech, a lot of people in my tech community say like, hey, the highest performers in tech and the software engineers almost all played video games and solved those problems. So I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I just think the risks far outweigh the benefit. And it's not true connection. Like, let's be real. When you're
That's
on
true.
a video game playing Call of Duty and trash talking a stranger about blowing their head off or chirping at your friends during Minecraft, it's not real community. They're not in your house. You're not building deeper connections.
Right.
You are literally trash talking behind a little, 10 digit screen name or whatever they call it. So
right.
I don't buy that argument. I think there are hundreds of ways that are better for kids to socialize and get involvement with people.
Yeah.
And I think that some kids can do it with balance. And if your kid can do it with balance, it's fine. But if your kid is showing severe signs of addiction and you're in denial, then it's time to wake up and make some changes.
Makes sense. I'm going to skip a couple of these. Next one up.
We definitely need to skip number two.
Right. Exactly. We may not even get this, we may be flagged on social media if we, I have had episodes flagged for talking about, vaccines, by the way, but,
it's less and less of that now that the owner of social media,
the risk is lower
to be able to say what they want to say, but and passing, some vaccines are good and important, but a lot of them make absolutely no sense to me personally. So why are we jabbing? Why are we jabbing a 3-hour-old baby with a hepatitis B vaccine when the only way to get hepatitis B is intravenous drug use or being a prostitute on the street?
Right.
The argument for that vaccine is that the mother could have hepatitis B. Do we know how people get hepatitis B, and why in the world are we putting aluminum that goes straight to the brain in our new babies for that?
Right.
That's all I'll say there.
No, and I'll just chime in that. My issue is that you can't even, it's almost like you're not allowed to question it. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily that, like, you didn't say all vaccines are wrong or anything.
Yeah.
But it's like
vaccines literally have saved millions and millions of people.
Absolutely. But we're not allowed to have a critical thought about it. You know, that it feels that way to me, but, so I wanted to disagree with you on that one, but I can't. So let's skip down. So routine blood work and hormone optimization would keep all these 40-year-old men from looking like blobs and 40-year-old women sexually active with their husbands. What do you mean by that?
When you go to the PCP, your primary care physician, and you say, hey, doc, I would like to know what my testosterone is, and I would like to know a little bit more about where my estrogen levels are, and I'd like to know a little bit more about, cancer markers or vitamin D levels or cortisol levels or some deeper markers on heart health. We can go to the one on heart health because I'm really passionate about that. The PCP more likely than not will argue with you and tell you that he does not agree with checking it and you're not showing any signs of issues. He'll ask you if you have erectile dysfunction, and if the answer is no, he'll dismiss what you're trying to ask him to do. And it's just it's total BS. Total BS. It's not healthy. It's not healthy to walk around at 200 and 300 testosterone levels. It's bad. It's bad for you. So,
right.
These PCPs are like, I made a tweet, a very precise tweet about that about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
A doctor in the replies, who's actually a friend of mine, started talking about how, biannual or quarterly blood work is way too often. Like, you shouldn't be doing it. There's no reason to know this stuff. And unless you're finding symptoms, it's more worry than it's worth. And I got in the DMs. I was like, okay, what's your testosterone? What's your lipid panel look like? Where are your cortisol levels? Where's your vitamin D? Do you know what he told me? You know what he told me?
He didn't know.
He hadn't had blood work in 5 years.
Wow. That's incredible. That's unreal. Seriously.
It's negligent.
Right. Sure.
So these doctors are upsetting me slightly in this topic.
Yeah. I mean, so I've been working with a functional medicine nurse practitioner in this case, because in Maryland it's not that big of a difference really. You don't necessarily need a doctor for prescriptions, but yeah, I mean, I've learned so much. I mean, and I will say people need to be careful in that world as well, because there are people who are going to take advantage of you, and you always have to be careful and ask critical questions.
Oh my gosh, my buddy got put on TRT without the doctor telling him that if you're on TRT for a long time, you're not gonna be able to have any more kids because your sperm count's gonna go to zero.
Right.
So yes, there is a ton of bad actors in the space.
Right.
And I'm not talking about TRT. I'm not on TRT.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just knowing where you are.
Right, information.
And tracking heart health very closely, your stress levels, your vitamin D, these other things that are super important.
Right. Well, and I've heard different podcasts about this, and the truth is the insurance companies, most people change their insurance company, their health insurance provider every I think it's like 5 years, or maybe even more frequently than that now. And so Nick Huber's problem in 25 years from now is not his current health insurance provider's problem, right? So it's much more beneficial in their mind to pass you on your problem onto somebody else. So they're not proactive. So these tests you're talking about, for the most part, are not covered by insurance, right? So, and so the doctors and, you know, most of the doctors in the traditional medicine field are good people, I will say, right? But it's the system, and they're not incentivized to.
And frankly, they don't have time. They don't have time.
Like, sure.
They have they're 15 minutes back to back their entire career. Being a primary care physician is the worst job in the world to have.
Mm-hmm.
It's brutal. It's brutal on you. Right. It's brutal on your family. Your clients are texting you on weekends. You're back to back to back to back. And you don't actually have time to help anybody.
Right.
Preventative. So I've gotten super serious about longevity.
Yeah.
I went to do a full body workup in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I have a functional health doctor and a longevity doctor who is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's just it's so different than the way normal doctors are trained that it's kind of sad.
So what about the 40-year-old women being sexually active? Let's drill down a little
bit. People don't understand that, like, your hormones being out of whack will mess up everything. Mm-hmm. So, like, if your wife doesn't want to have sex with you at 40 years old,
mm-hmm.
that's not acceptable. It's not acceptable. Like, of course I'm not, that came off a little bad. Like, not acceptable.
Right.
You have to treat your wife like a lady.
Right.
But still, like, hormones being out of whack will ruin people.
No.
And they walk around not even knowing it.
I'll, you know, physical intimacy, not that we're going to spend too much time on this, but it's absolutely critical for a romantic relationship. I mean, it really is the defining factor of, in my opinion, of a marriage or romantic relationship versus a friendship or some other, you know, coworker mm-hmm. relationship, whatever. I mean, it is it. So if that's missing, it's not a marriage. It's not a long-term relationship. It's not a thriving one anyway. So, and you're absolutely right. I think the physiological factors are huge. So,
when I was talking to a friend who, we were comparing DEXA scans.
Okay.
A DEXA scan literally tells you how much muscle mass you have and how much fat you have on your body and where your bone density is. He's 6 inches shorter than me.
Okay.
And he's got 40 pounds of extra fat on his body than I have on my body.
Wow.
And he tries hard, man. He works
out. Right.
So maybe he's actually only about 3 inches shorter.
Okay.
We were having a conversation and I'm like, he's very against, he doesn't know where his hormones are. He doesn't mm-hmm. know where his testosterone is. He is mm-hmm. very against GLP-1s and, mm-hmm. you know, Ozempic and these peptides.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with him. I'm like, dude, what are you afraid of with this stuff? Like, mm-hmm. what's the fear? And he's like, I just think that there's long-term side effects. I was like, you don't think there's long-term side effects of you carrying around? Like, I'm your friend. I'm going to tell you something that you might not want to hear.
Right.
You don't think there's long-term side effects of you carrying around an extra 40 pounds of fat.
Right. It's a great point. Yeah.
Like, I mean, everything in life has positives and negatives.
Yeah. And doing if I was
carrying around 40 pounds while I was trying, A, my testosterone is probably 200. And B, mm-hmm. I would sure as hell get on Ozempic to like get my shit together.
Yeah, for sure. And it all plays into, like, you know, people talk a lot about time management. And I mean, that's, I do think important, but I think energy management is really important as well. And if you're running low energy every day because your testosterone levels are low, you're not running your real estate business very well, or whatever you're working on. You're not going to show up as the best version of yourself as a father, husband, et cetera. So yeah, I agree on that one for sure. Let's skip down. Large vehicles are 10 times safer than small vehicles. Don't put your wife or 16-year-old in a sedan.
Yeah. I feel super, super passionate about this. And it angers Twitter every time I talk about how a Tesla is not as safe as my F-150. here's the bottom line, is that every crash test compares other vehicles in the same class, same size,
mm-hmm.
and they're all single car accidents of a car hitting an mm-hmm. object. Those are every single crash test. Mm-hmm. I don't drive crazy. I'm not worried about a single car accident.
Right.
What I'm worried about is somebody texting and blowing a red light and slamming into my driver's side door. Mm. Or my back passenger door where my kid is sitting.
Sure.
That's my fear, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I'm sitting in a Tesla and my chin is 4.5 feet off the ground. I'm getting the grill. I'm getting the grill of that F-150 that teenager is driving right in my chin.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking physics here, man. Like, we're talking physics.
Right.
So people will put their families, people, high earners will put their families in sedans, and they'll put their daughters in sedans.
Yeah.
And all it takes is one split second of your daughter, your wife, or you not seeing a vehicle and pulling out at the wrong time. And driving in a Suburban or driving in a Camry is the difference between walking away and dying.
Hmm. Right.
And then there's people whose daughters want Jeep Wranglers and they say yes. And it's just absolutely, absolutely, it's just delusional to me because those are the most unsafe vehicles on the road.
Hmm.
And you're going to put a 16-year-old girl behind the wheel.
Right. Yeah, well, sounds like you're putting Teslas down for a different reason than other people are recently.
I love Teslas. I love the tech.
Yeah.
Cybertrucks, if they didn't look quite so obnoxious, I'd probably get one.
They're a little extreme, let's be honest. Yeah. What about the Earth though with these huge vehicles? I mean, aren't you killing the planet?
That's a very real
mm-hmm.
not the planet. I don't care at all about gas mileage. But the fear is you put your daughter in a Suburban
mm-hmm.
and she's going to run a red light.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to pull out in front of somebody. And so
mm-hmm.
It really is an arms race. And you could also get the call that your daughter ran a red light and killed three people in a Camry. And that's
right. Sure.
So yeah, it's a mental balance. But unfortunately, we live in a world where you got to put your family first.
No, that's true for sure. All right, let's skip down. So plastics are killing us. Polyester underwear, tea bags, cutting boards, microwavable meals in plastic. I know I've heard a lot about microplastics. I guess I'll ask, you know, what are we supposed to do about that? Even if that's true, what are we supposed to do about it?
Yeah, there's an 80-20. That's not like you can go Brian Johnson on this stuff, on any of this stuff.
Yeah, go super extreme.
And you can worry about it and you can let it impact your life. And every time you go to a restaurant, you're going to bring your own water. Like,
right.
There's that extreme. And then there's the extreme of like using something like this.
Right. Right.
To drink water out of instead of a plastic cup.
Sure.
So fluoride is in our water. It's really bad for us. We know that. They're going to start taking it out. 5 years, it's going to be out of the American water supply. Thank God. But it's not yet. And if you're a pregnant lady drinking fluoride, really, really bad for you. If you're feeding your kids water that has fluoride, it's really, really bad. So get a filter for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't eat out of plastic,
right?
Especially heat up plastic. So a tea bag is made out of nylon. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. No.
Go empty out your cabinet now, like right or right after this call. But a tea bag is made out of nylon. So Joe Gebbia from Airbnb has spent a ton of time working on this. I was lucky enough to make friends with him and chat with him a little bit on it. And he's super passionate about it. And he basically gave me the 80-20. Like, if you do these things, you're going to be fine from a plastic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Never, ever, ever use tea bags is number one, because they're made out of nylon and they release over 3 billion particles of plastic into your drink when you dip it in your boiling hot water.
I had no clue. I hadn't heard that one. That's crazy.
Yeah. The black plastic stirring spoons for and spatulas for cooking. Absolutely terrible. Use wood or stainless.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic cutting boards. Absolutely terrible. Meals like factor meals that come in plastic containers and you put that plastic in the microwave and heat that plastic are terrible. Mm-hmm. Letting a water bottle sit in your hot car and get hot.
Mm-hmm.
Before you drink out of it is terrible. You shouldn't actually drink out of those bottles at all because they could be in the back of a semi truck getting hot and releasing billions of particles of plastic into the water bottle. That said, I was really thirsty at the golf course and I ordered a water and drank it out of a water bottle. Again, it's like there's an 80-20 here.
Sure.
And then polyester clothes are bad. It's getting into your skin. The scrotum is the most like succulent,
absorbent. Yeah,
it's the most absorbent part of the body. So,
right,
a very simple one is to get wool underwear. I use Wooly, Wolly.
Mm-hmm.
If you sweat, and use cotton if you don't sweat. I like wool. It's more expensive. It lasts less long. It's $35-$40 for a pair of underwear. But it doesn't stink and it doesn't stick to you when you start to sweat.
Right.
But get your kids in cotton underwear. buy the Millie Moon diapers that don't have plastic in them from Target, because it matters. And then the other half of it that you almost have no control over is every time you put polyester in the dryer, billions of particles enter the air and you breathe it in.
Man, wow. Yeah, well, have you ever been on a podcast interviewed about and talked about your underwear before?
No, it's the first one. I'm not
That's
an
funny.
expert. Like, I'm not an expert on any of this. I'll just tell you that now. Like, I've done the 80-20 on this stuff. I've listened to a lot of experts. I have learned enough to form my opinion and my strategy. But I don't take it too far.
Well, and you are open to changing your mind, like you said. So, two real quickly that we'll kind of well, we'll keep them
Oh,
separate.
also nonstick pans, whether
Oh,
it's a bread
right.
maker, a pressure cooker, an actual pot or pan.
Sure.
Throw it all. Don't even give it away. Throw it all in the garbage now. It is very, very, very bad for you.
Man.
Use stainless steel pans and pots.
Yeah. All right. Two that might, one here that may relate more to, the real estate investing that people are interested in that listen to this show. AI won't change the world very much. People
Hell
are
yeah.
overreacting today, just like Elon when he told us we'd have full self-driving cars by 2014. It's a long way off. So talk about AI. I mean, I can tell you ChatGPT in the last like 4 months. I'm not an expert, but it's definitely gotten better. It's like significantly just better. It's more efficient, it's smarter, it's more practical. So you're seeing like pretty quick increases in the efficiency of it and the growth of AI, but why won't it change the world very much?
People still live in a house with four walls. People still need to drive on concrete. People still are trying to buy food from Walmart. People are still sending their kids to schools and waking up and putting their pants on one leg at a time. 99.9% of people are just trying to make rent and plan their next vacation. Like, I think a lot of VCs and a lot of entrepreneurs should go to Walmart every quarter and just walk around and look at the average American. I think they lose touch with what the average American is actually what they're living like. That said, I'm following AI phenomenally close because my business depends on it and I like making profit. If I can find a way to reduce the headcount of my 325 employees, that's millions of dollars in my pocket. So I'm going to be the very first one to jump for joy when AI allows me to run a more efficient business and do more work with the same amount of people. That said, I've looked into 50 tools. I've demoed 20 plus tools, and I've tried to implement 6 to 8 AI tools into my business. Fathom is the only one that's still here. The rest of them have been an utter waste of time. So I have a phenomenally open mind about this. We actually train executive assistants at somewhere before we hand them off to clients. A huge chunk and growing chunk of that training is around AI. How to make graphic designs for real estate packages, how to, have better grammar, like how to look up things, like all the things that can help somebody be more
How to create a
efficient.
prompt for AI,
Right. Prompt writing. It's going to be like Google searching.
Skill.
I agree with it. Prompt writing is going to be much like Googling. So you're going to be able to get smarter, you're going to be able to learn faster, but is it going to change the way we live our lives?
Yeah,
And
probably
also the
not.
last thing I'll say about it is that I listened to Elon Musk on Rogan when he was talking to his AI. I've listened to my friends who were super excited about AI talk to their AI things. I've called and tried to talk on the phone to a couple AI customer service reps. I've listened to Andrew Wilkinson talk to his AI. I've followed it. All of it is completely laughable. It's laughable to think that any self-respecting business owner who pays money for the phone to ring would want that, providing a customer service experience to any of their clients, whether they're just trying to pay an invoice or they actually want to pay them money. People are quite delusional, but there's a shock factor that it can do what it can do. But there's no fucking way that I'm letting that answer the phone for my storage facilities.
All right, last one more that we're going to talk about here. Crypto outside of Bitcoin is a total waste of time and electricity. Why?
It goes back to my dog is eating a giant piece of plastic. One second.
Oh.
Okay, so All right, crypto. It's just another one of those things that has wow factor, has utility, change the world. I see it doing almost absolutely nothing for anybody ever. I can't think of a use case that it actually solves. I can't think of any self-respecting person who would rather send that than money. I know 20 people who have gotten robbed blind of almost all their crypto. So it just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I mean, I threw a little bit of money at it, but quite honestly, it's just gambling because I have no idea.
We got to talk a little bit about heart disease because I feel super passionate
Okay,
about it.
let's do it. Let's
The
do
majority
it.
of your audience is probably men.
Yeah, true.
So men live an average, what is it, 6 years less long than women,
Yeah,
about.
I think that's right. Yep.
The reason why is that we are genetically disposed and we have larger bodies and we are more likely to get heart disease, period. It's heart disease. And in men, heart disease is a 10 times killer, 10x. It kills 10x as many people as cancer, which is number two. Did you know that?
No, I knew one and two, but I didn't know the difference there, that it was that big of a multiple difference.
Yep. So how old are you?
I'm 49.
49. Have you had a heart workup where they have imaged the arteries going
I
in and out
did
of your
ju
heart
well, I
and then
just
give
did
you a calcium scan?
the calcium scan. Actually, recently, I've done two of them in the last, say, 5 years, but I'm sure there's a
Good.
more in-depth scan I could get done. I'm not sure.
No, it's great. Like even just knowing your calcium score and like how much plaque is building up in your heart is something that a ton of high income earners don't know. And they don't know what their cholesterol levels and their lipid panels and other factors that influence heart disease and their blood sugar, insulin levels. They don't know those things and how serious that is, because the odds are you're going to die of heart disease. If you don't get hit by a car, the odds are you're going to die of heart disease. So the fact that nobody tracks it, and even heart doctors will say, oh, you're fine, come back in 10 years, when somebody's like, scores an 800 on the calcium score test, is just beyond me. So
So just a practical tip for those listening. I mean, that's the CT scan or calcium score. I think it's the same thing, but
yeah, there's like a $500 version where they can get a pretty accurate calcium score and get some imaging, and then there's a two to $3,000 version where they hook you up to, you're in an MRI machine, they hook you up to an IV, they put dye in your body and it flushes your body, and then they get an image of the blood moving in and out, and they have walls of the arteries, they have cross sections of it four different ways, and they get a full image of your heart. There's also a lot of the population that's walking around with heart defects and don't even know it. Bad valves, reversed ventricles, like all these things that are super, super, super bad for you long term.
And it's not that hard to get a scan done or that expensive, really, if we're talking about saving your life. So, yeah, good point. Awesome. I'm sure we'll get some feedback on some of those opinions. So you've got a book coming out. Let's talk about that, and then let's talk about a couple of the passages in the book. Tell us about the book that you have coming out, Nick.
Yeah, so over the last 5 years, well, everybody knows my mission. Like, I'm on a mission to, there's two directions to go in entrepreneurship. There's the Silicon Valley, raise money, change the world, new idea, Shark Tank version. And then there's the path that everybody gets rich in every town in America, which is the normal, bit boring, old fashioned way. So, like, the wealthy people that I know in this world, they fly private jets, they own the biggest houses, they play golf with the most exclusive clubs, they do whatever they want. 99 out of 100 of them did not have a new idea. It was built a big surveying business, run underground utilities for, developers, you name it, just some kind of business where they scaled it and grew it. So the book is all about that and how to spot opportunities, what skills you need, how to hire, how to fire, how to delegate, sales, how to attract people, the skills you need. And then the last chapter is my opinions on picking the right career, how to move up at work, like why family's important, my thoughts on raising kids, stuff like that. So it's called The Sweaty Startup. I don't know when you're listening to this, but it'll come out on April 29th, 2025, and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, putting a book together is not an easy task for sure. Let's talk about there's a story in the book, starts on page 31, where you were Around the time that you and your business partner were launching Storage Squad, you were in the locker room and you heard somebody talking about your idea, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there was zero status in what I was doing when I started my first company. I was literally sweating my butt off, hauling boxes around, loading them in the back of a beat up cargo van with rusted out panels that I bought on Craigslist for $1,500. I'm at
I
an
mean,
Ivy League school. This is
yeah.
junior year where guys are about to go off to do their internships at Goldman Sachs, at Bain, at, all of these big time firms. We're in the Ivy League.
Right, sure.
And I was electing to move boxes around to make, what, I don't know what it was, $40 an hour on my time, right? So yeah, I was excited though. Like I was just an excitable kid. I don't know if it was the Midwesterner in me or just this, I've still have this, like, it's like an irrational confidence that I can do things that I can't always do. Like I'm humble enough to admit I can't do them, but I think that I can. I think it's going to be easy. I get excited about it. So I was in the early days of starting this company, and I'm on the track team. I'm a junior. I'm about to go in the track like locker room, and I'm outside the door, and like I check my phone or something happens. I drop something. And I reach down and I hear some people talking, and it's like the big wigs on the track team, and they are not just talking, but they're like making fun of me to them to amongst each other. Is like we're out here going to get a job at JP Morgan, and Nick is moving boxes around in a a derogatory name for a van with no windows on the side of it, right? So I just kind of step back. I'm like, holy shit. And it hurt, man. It hurt.
I can imagine.
So I didn't have a choice but to like act like I didn't hurt and go about my business and keep doing what I was doing. It was motivating in a way though, for sure.
Yeah, how so? What was the takeaway for you?
Well, I felt bad and I was like, damn, they might be right. Like, what am I doing? I could go get a job and try to build a career, and am I making the wrong decision with this Ivy League degree that I've been lucky enough to have, and it is a stupid idea and it is a shitty van and whatever else. So those thoughts all were there for sure, but I just said F you instead, and I'm gonna do this.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, on some level, I want to say you swallowed your ego and were humble because, like you said, you didn't care about the status. And it's not even no status, it's like low status. It's like less than no status. It's almost, I mean, just being honest, it looks like, worse than doing nothing. I mean, in a sense, it's like, and so I'm not trying to put you down. It's just like, it's so you kind of swallowed your ego, but at the same time, it's almost like part of your ego said, no, F you, I'm going to do this. I mean, what's the takeaway for the listener there? It's just don't ever listen to anybody who's telling you who has unsolicited advice or what should we do?
No, I think I've also saved myself a lot of headache by listening to people who had opinions that contradicted my opinions. So I don't think that's the takeaway. I think the takeaway is that what's high status and the way everybody's going might not be the best way to go. It might not be. Like you look at the highest status jobs in our world, it's accountant, it's doctor, it's lawyer. There's more, there's, and I respect the hell out of all three of those groups. And I think a lot of them do really well and do live a high quality of life. But as a whole, they're very difficult jobs. There's almost no quality of life, and your odds of ending up 50 years old, divorced and out of shape and unhappy, but rich are very, very high. So yeah, it's a really tough thing of like, what opportunity do I pick in this world? But a big passion in my book, a story in my book is like, look down the hall. Look down the hall at what it looks like to win the game you're about to play.
I love that.
Do you want to go be a consultant and then transition into private equity and then buy companies like that? If you get an offer at Bain or McKinsey, like you'd be foolish not to take it because almost all of them end up in different areas of the economy just kicking ass. But before you go to med school, or before you take sit for the bar exam, or before you go take the job at the company that you're about to take the job at, like look at what it's like to win the game before you become a teacher. Talk to the teachers that are 50. What's your life like? What's your earning potential? Do you have any freedom?
Sure.
Or are you literally in a group chat just having parents berate you all day?
Right, right.
Which is what being a teacher today is, unfortunately.
That's good advice. One more snippet from the book. On page 213 and 214, you say, nobody gave me permission to get rich. I didn't come from a real estate family. I didn't have the right resume. I didn't get a job offer to work at a real estate firm out of college. But here I am. You're probably not qualified either. You didn't get the right degree. You don't know everything you need to know. No way you can do this. You might have said to yourself, but you say, that's all bullshit. Don't wait for permission. Give yourself permission and start now. Talk about that.
I think the anxiety and the insecurity and the fear of failure and the fear of just not being qualified is something that holds so many people back. Some of the wealthiest people I know who earn the most amount of money, there's almost no correlation to how smart they are and their intelligence level to the people who play video games at 35 in their parents' basements. There's almost no difference in IQ. But those wealthy people earn an absurd amount of money simply because, many of them, simply because they're not insecure.
That's really good.
So if, like, my story is, and look, there are many people who are way more successful than me. I'm not just painting myself as, oh my God, look at Nick. You name anybody out there who's done incredible things. Nobody gave them permission to do what they did. I didn't study real estate. I didn't come from a country club on Long Island. I would have went and tried to get a job at a real estate private equity firm in New York City or Atlanta or Charlotte, and they would have said, no, Nick, like, you studied labor relations at Cornell. You don't know anything about real estate. Get out of here. I would not have had permission, but I built a real estate private equity company and bought a bunch of storage. Every single defining decision that I've made in my life, if I would have looked for permission or if I would have looked for somebody else to tell me that I was qualified or ready or that it was risk-free, like, every decision I made had a lot of reasons why I should not have done it.
Right.
To moving boxes with that $1,500 cargo van instead of going to get that job for Coca-Cola for 80 grand a year out of college, borrowing almost 2 million bucks and raising 500K to build that first self-storage facility from the ground up. Literally 95 out of 100 investors told me that it was not going to work, and 9 out of 10 banks would not lend me the money because they didn't think it was going to work.
Wow, that's wild. I need to have you back. There's just a lot here. couple of quick questions because we do need to hop off here in a minute. Looking back, what's one of your biggest failures and what did you learn from it?
Oh man, I mean I fail every day. I make poor decisions every day. Luckily, I'm at a point now where I have enough momentum and I'm hedging enough risk that there's not a single decision that has the opportunity to sink me. But I mean, we've had 7,000 square foot warehouses full of stuff flood back in the storage days. You know, we've had our driver hit somebody on the side of the road and injure them in our truck. I've had to, you know, had my one of my best friends crying in my arms 2 weeks after he stood up with me in my wedding because I had to fire him from one of my companies.
Wow, that's a tough one.
So, like, everybody wants to own the companies. Everybody wants to have the stuff, I guess. But man, like, it's never stress-free.
Right. No, entrepreneurship is not for the faint of heart. That's for sure. Yeah. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it? No strings attached.
Oh man, I think, first of all, I think a large sum of money given to anybody is a recipe for total disaster. But I would pay taxes with 4 million. And then the last 6 million, I'd become my own LP in storage deals, with the rest of it for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. What's a challenge that you're facing in your business right now?
Every day.
Yeah,
it's hard. I'm rebuilding the sales teams across a couple companies right now.
Okay.
It's fun, but a challenge.
Got it. What is a book besides yours that you could recommend to our listeners?
Seven, or the Five Types of Wealth by Sahil Bloom.
Got it.
I got to take it. I'll be right back. Hold on one second.
Okay. All right, Nick, a few more questions and then we'll wrap up. Looking forward, what do you think are some of the emerging challenges in the real estate space that just maybe whether we're talking single family or storage or whatever you want to talk about, but just emerging challenges in real estate investing?
I think the hard part about my business, self-storage, is that you can underwrite with today's technology, whether it be ZoomInfo, Crexie, all the tools out there to get data on real estate, Radius, all this information on storage. It's really hard to get a competitive advantage from an underwriting standpoint in the storage business. Somebody can send me a text message with three things: square footage, revenue per month, and an address. And I can tell you the value of that storage facility from here, from where I'm sitting, anywhere in the country. I can tell you the value of that storage facility in about 10 minutes.
Wow, that's
So
incredible.
that makes it really hard because it's now a level playing field and people can buy storage anywhere in the world. Now, operating these things is not as easy. So that's where you got to really know what you're doing to operate these things remotely. I've learned that over the last 5 years of doing this. You got to run a tight ship.
Well, and that's one of your
Not
key tenets, I think, for business is operations, right? I mean, that's
But
where
it's hard. Like when you're not there, when you're remotely operating a storage facility in, 63 different, properties in different areas, it's hard. So there's always advantages to be had. That's why I really like some of these other asset classes. Industrial is really awesome because it's a local game, man. You got to understand an individual city, town, neighborhood to even think about buying an industrial building. So, but yeah, so that's maybe an issue with some other asset classes as well, where technology and maybe it's AI that kind of levels the playing field of underwriting. But it's always a relationship game, man. Like if you're good at sales, you can look people in the eye and you can build a relationship, then you can do really well in the real estate business. And I don't think that'll ever change.
And that's why you should not be playing video games in your parents' basement.
I pick on those guys.
It all ties back to, human interaction and sales, like you said. And these are skills that seem to be going away for a
Yeah,
lot of people.
my 7-year-old can walk up to an adult, look them in the eye, and shake their hand and ask him a question about themselves.
They're
There's
already in the top 10%.
13 year olds, there's 13 year olds who can't do that and take their Nintendo Switch to dinner with them.
That's pretty sad. How has financial abundance made your life better, Nick?
Man, I don't think money is everything, but unless you want to buy something.
Like that. That's a good quote.
It is so important. It's so important. I mean, I'm not into fancy things. I live in a house that I bought for less than 300 grand. I don't drive. I drive an F-150 that's almost 2 years old now. I don't have expensive taste. But man, being able to solve problems and not have a stress on your family and your marriage because you can pay the bills that come up in everyday life is a massive, massive blessing. And then there's a level beyond that of finding out your mom works for $12 an hour and is pretty stressed at work, and you're just like, Mom, hey, you're not doing that anymore.
Love that. What's one question that you wish I'd asked that I haven't asked?
I wanted you to touch on the powerlifting one. No, just kidding.
That's
No, I
funny.
think you did an amazing job, man. This has been an awesome
Thanks.
conversation.
And for the listener, Nick's referring to powerlifting, and you also said long distance running, I think, in two different parts of the tweet are not good, basically,
I
right?
think people, like a lot of the guys I know who work out are addicted to working out, unfortunately. Everything takes balance. Like there's no reason why 40-year-old men should be running 40, 50 miles a week and doing a 26-mile run as fast as possible. Like that, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But
You were a
hell.
track guy, right?
Yeah, I was a track guy. And I also think like putting a bunch of weight on a steel bar and putting it on your back and taking your ass to your heels as a 40-year-old is just absolutely silly.
Well, you make me feel better because I don't do squats anymore. So awesome.
All the guys I know who still do have a chronic back pain.
All right, Nick, where can our listeners find you online?
I think go to sweatystartup.com/ideas. You can download a list of a bunch of business ideas and kind of get a feel for my mantra. You can also email me. If you want to discount it somewhere, if you got feedback on the book, email me, nick@sweatystartup.com. Me and my team read every single one of them.
Awesome. This has been really fun. This has been way different than most of my other episodes, all of my other episodes. So, yeah, I'd love to have you back for a third time. You know, if we could schedule that, that'd be fantastic. Any parting thoughts for the listener?
No, man. I think we covered a lot, and I just really appreciate you giving me the platform, and you did a great job. So awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time, Nick. And to the listener, thank you for sharing your most valuable resource with us, and that is your time. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey, I'm Jamie Bateman. Over the years, I've learned that success in mortgage notes and real estate investing boils down to making smart decisions quickly and confidently. That's why I'm excited to share with you the Ideal Project Analyzer, or IPA for short, a tool that's been a true game changer for me and so many other investors. This Excel-based powerhouse simplifies the entire process, letting you analyze assets in minutes and explore multiple exit strategies without second-guessing your choices. It's like having a trusted advisor built into your workflow, helping you save time and reduce risks every step of the way. With the IPA, you're not just investing smarter, you're unlocking a whole new level of success. Whether you're new to the game or you're a seasoned pro, this tool gives you the edge you need to maximize returns and streamline and present your investments to investors. And right now, you can get the IPA at an exclusively discounted rate, just $849 plus $25 per month. Trust me, this is the tool that will take your note investing and real estate investing to the next level. Visit LabradorLending.com to learn more and to see how the IPA can transform your investing journey today.